Welcome to part two of our conversation with Jason Meese. Jason, I'm glad we didn't scare you off the first time.
It's punishment is pain or whatever that phrase is. So always glad to come back for more. Now, this is joking aside, tech is a team sport. So thanks for having us for round two.
It was a wonderful conversation. There are so many things that we didn't cover and of great interest. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to go right into it because Eric has a question as far as market trends and competition, right?
I do. Yes. Thanks, Jason, for coming back. So we talked about AI a little bit. And we know that there are trends coming in the future. There's a lot of different things that competition is doing. So how do you stay ahead of your competition in the rapidly evolving AI market?
Yeah, that's a really good question. That's one of those where I won't bloviate too long on that part, but I think it leads us into the next one. As we unpacked a lot of the last discussion, the one thing we really didn't dig as deep into that I think we should in this session is where do humans fit into all of this? Because that then dovetails, Eric, right into exactly what you're asking. So from a stay on point kind of thing, the only way you can with a technology that is evolving so fast is to keep playing with it. And so we do it across our partner ecosystem. So we practice what we preach, eat our own dog food. I like to say drink your own champagne, as we alluded to before, but you have to play with it. And what's different in this one, and if you recall back, the exponential factor of this growth curve doesn't allow you to think about it as you had before. And what I mean by that is, and we all know the difference between waterfall and agile and all these other cool terms that say, hey, go fast, break things, all that cool stuff. The difference is before you had the luxury of not being an innovator, but you could be just in not necessarily a laggard either in the tech adoption curve, but you could be in the majority section and it would take a handful of quarters a year before something got fully deployed. Now stuff is happening in weeks. My slides are literally out of date, sometimes in the same week. And so you can't keep up with all of it. You can't be omnipotent. Now, what's interesting is there are now AI tools to help you understand what's happening with AI because it's happening so fast. Like that's funky and interesting, unique. But the answer is across people, process, and product, you got to play with it. You got to have your teams broken up into different swim lanes that say, hey, how is AI going to impact the endpoint? What's happening with more GPU compute on there? Is Llama 3 really that good? This team, go play with it. Okay. What does AI in the cloud look like? How do you secure that? What is model poisoning? Okay. This team, go play with it. Hey, here's this emerging thing where this is coming out of the labs. Okay. We don't see a way to monetize that or we don't see that applicability yet, but here's what it is, something to keep eye on. So you really just have to have different groups or champions come back and report back because it is happening so fast. So I hope that answered your question, Eric, but basically the answer is play with it. Just get in and play with it.
Yeah. So it leads to the next one. And thank you for that because everything does change. Like you said, your slides can be out of date within a week. So I guess right at this point in time, what do you believe the key trends are that will shape the future of AI in your industry?
Yeah, I think it's at the end of the day, we alluded at this, and this is where it's an interesting discussion to unpack. And is where I think we'll have the majority of this podcast, which is AI is nothing but a really good prediction engine. That's all it is. At the end of the day, that's all it really is. Humans are still needed for the knowledge-based decisioning off that information. And so we like to peel it back. And whether you're in a B2B, B2B2C, B2C company, doesn't really matter. How are folks interacting with AI is where I like to start. Because a lot of times people, whether you're talking to your parents, to your friends, to your technology friends, think, hey, I don't really use it that much. Yeah, you do. And so just start walking down some of those use cases so they have that aha moment. And so I'll riff a little bit on this one. Customer service and chatbots are fundamentally different. I'll give you an experience that literally just happened to me this weekend. So I bought these two Apple Watch bands off Instagram. They look cool. They arrived. They were terrible. Not fit for purpose. Didn't fit in my watch. Like it was hokey. I was questioning to begin with. There's only two watch bands. It was a $98 purchase. So it's enough where I actually care, but not so much that I'm going to be worried one way or the other. The return process consisted of 6 emails back and forth of me taking a picture, showing that it didn't fit. And finally, I'm like, hey, this is obviously a fraudulent transaction. Refund this. Or I'm just going to call my credit card company. This is a waste of my time. Like I was irritated. Now I'm playing it out. Now I've wasted, I don't know, probably 30 minutes to an hour of my life over the weekend showing someone in some far-flung part of the planet that I was not lying to them. And they knew I wasn't. They knew this was a crap band. Doesn't matter. On the opposite side of that, Amazon, there was a return that was stuck in the loop, was obviously a chatbot. did a quick data assessment as to my buying pattern, realized I probably returned less than X percent, and automatically just refunded my card without even getting to a human. I don't need a human to do that. So that customer service, that chatbot, we think about, hey, it can answer questions. It can do a whole lot more. And it gives me more time to do what I want to do. And those cases are good examples as to where a human in the middle wasn't helping anything. In fact, it was adding unnecessary friction that was going to end the same anyway. It wasn't like I was going to capitulate and be like, oh, keep the $100. I want these two crappy bands that I can't use. No, we're going to end this one way or the other. So speed it up. That's one. But if you just walk down the list, it's email filtering, right? Think about the ridiculous amount of emails we get personally and professionally. There's not some human in there saying spam, not spam. And it gets it right 99% of the time, which is not great for banking transactions, but it's pretty good for my email and my map app. Those kind of things and helping people realize that's how humans interact with it. But going back even to the map thing, just because pick your map app tells me to reroute this other destination, still my choice. I'm the knowledge person that's going to determine whether I get off the highway. Do I grind through the side street traffic? Do I stay on it? How bad does that accident look? So all that knowledge, it's just helping predict what's a better outcome, but humans still need to hop back in. And so making sure humans are on point and using personal assistance and playing with automation and thinking through what that is really what folks need to get their head around, because it's been here and it's only going to get more explosive in growth.
Yeah, it's awesome. Thanks, Jason. And that's a very good example, because those things are super annoying as a customer. And so really with that AI automation, it can understand your patterns and it can make good decisions. And then it can say, okay, yes, based on this, we are going to do a refund. And so that helps with customer retention, but also it helps with referrals for prospect customers. So that's very huge. Okay, absolutely. I've got one more follow-up question to that. You talked about people. And so people, how do you retain the top talent for AI? It's a very competitive field. How do you gather them into your company? And how, another part to that, how do you foster a environment where AI is one of your top goals?
Yeah, great question. And it is my favorite NBA answer, if it depends, right? Your mileage may vary, because it depends on what that person's looking to get out of it, where they're at, what fits into it. But it harkens me back. So I'm dyslexic. So I am terrible at spelling. So thank goodness, right when I got to like high school, spell checks were out there and stuff. So mask it, move forward. Because it didn't really matter if I could spell the words correctly, as long as I could communicate my message. And I'm taking this somewhere, so bear with me on this little riff. The same thing applies to folks in a technology standpoint, right? Like we've seen it's end of days for developers, and you can do so much faster, blah, blah, blah. It is for them memorizing syntax. Just, I don't know how to use a slide rule. I use a calculator. I could go figure it out, but why? It's a slow manual process. If I can automate it, and now I can just put it into a program. And so it's making sure that at your company, folks have the opportunity to grow with where AI can make them a better employee, coworker, consumer of tech. Not you have to know how to build it. And then that's where I think folks get a little bit lost here, because it is sometimes black magic and confusing in the tech space. We're not expecting our team to know how to design a neural network. That doesn't matter. That's super cool. That's out of our swim lane. But what I do expect you to do is play with it a little bit, learn how to think through the logic pattern. So from a prompt engineering standpoint, you can get meaningful value from Copilot for your day job, right? And so we push them a little bit, and it goes back to that major minor conversation you have with a lot of folks, which is, hey, your major is to do this within our company, and your minor, say it's 1 or 1.5 days a week, what do you have a passion around? What else do you want to go learn? What do you want to go grow in? Find a way to use AI to either automate, or from a generative AI way, start to get more prescriptive on how you actually can do your job better. And we let them go to it. And what we found is, it's actually accelerating our growth, but more importantly, to the very first question or for very first comment we had, they're now playing with emerging tech and coming back and reporting out on how it made their life better, which then, wait for it, helps our customers.
Yep. And I'm gonna go on that, because my whole thing before any of this stuff was human resources, more particularly in talent development and all that good stuff there. And it's funny, because I just saw I'm sure we've all seen it, but there was a Saturday Night Live skit with Beavis and Butthead recently, and they mimicked an MIT professor that was talking about AI. And part of that, of course, growing up in the 90s, I love the fact that it was about that cartoon. One of the things he said was, AI has taken over the world and it's going to eliminate us as humans. And from a human resource standpoint, that's a very valid concern that's coming across the board. But going into the leadership development and training and development aspect of it, What AI has done for those fields has been amazing because you can put something in there automatically and it'll spit out an awesome outline of training. And I've compared that with some of the things that I've made, and it is maybe a little bit off, but if you're an expert, you're going to be able to tweak that and then keep on iterating into something better. And that's it's amazing thing to see that. But and so as a piggyback on to what Eric asks is, how would you foster a culture of innovation within your AI teams?
And this is a tough one, right? And this is where, and I hate this phrase, it sounds very consultant-y, but it's the only one that comes to mind, which is bifurcated. It's going to be a very bifurcated answer. And what I mean by that is this. Right now, it's a really strong litmus test onto is that employee, is that girl or boy ready to go to the next level in their career, or have they capped out? And it's not around the technology itself, it's around the ability to think critically. I'll give you an example. So I'm again going back to being dyslexic, I'm terrible at syntax and coding. I understand the logic of Python, but if you ask me to do it, I'd be the bottom barrel of devs of any company ever, anywhere. But I understand the critical thinking of what that means to do. So from a pseudo code standpoint, I'm pretty solid, actually pretty strong. I don't need to know how to code the syntax anymore. I just can upload the pseudo code into basically any generative AI tool, and it's going to be more than 99% accurate. Off we go, check the code and move on. And so it's forcing critical problem solving, and it's stratifying those folks that can to the top of the food chain and those that can't to the bottom. So it is going to cause some disruption. I would contend that disruption is good because back in the day, and I forget which company did it, though, always purge your bottom 10% and all these draconian things that had
GE,
people
that was
on a
GE.
hamster wheel. And that's not healthy. That means one out of 10 people aren't going to be in the room, look right, look left, one's not going to be here. That's just nonsense, right? That's not a team sport. But this says, hey, everyone on the team is going to step up and we're all going to do our personal best. And you can get folks into lanes to do that. Because if you can't think through how the change management, the critical thinking, and the evolution come strategically, okay, that's fine. Someone can. Now let's get the folks that are better at the tactics and running it, go run it. So it doesn't mean you get rid of anybody. And I've seen a couple articles about that as well. AI should get us actually to zero unemployment. We're going to be a whole lot more efficient and effective, but it doesn't mean we're going to gut people. It means we're going to get folks into lanes where they can be most optimized and remove the menial tasks that we just don't need to do. Going back to slide rules. Yeah, we got someone into outer space on scratch sheets of paper and slide rules. We can do it. It just doesn't mean we should. If computers
Amazingly.
use that, get humans back to the decision making.
And I'm going to go back to what you said about change management too. Many of the models of change management, they're very academic, and one of them is actually based on the cycles of death. With everything going on with AI, what have you found has been in that cycle of change management has been the most difficult or the most challenging?
Too many use cases, right? Because we don't know, we can't outthink everyone else. We just can't. And so you have a swim lane of the stuff that you know and you're comfortable with. And then all of a sudden, it gets out there and there's like 100 projects that people want to do now. And when you look at it, you're like, yeah, 100 of these are pretty good. We should probably do 100, but we can do two. So I think it's the velocity of change. And this is the exciting and scary part where people go, wow, which is back to the exponential comment, not to beat a dead horse here. But since we don't think that way, as that's happening to us, it's creating some very uncomfortable spots because, okay, we can't get to it, but what if we had an AI engine that could deduce which use case was the best, model it all out, and then come back and tell us? Okay, we just had AI, again, a tool making a tool to decide on which part of the tool to use. It's pretty cool, but pretty scary. And so I think we don't know all the final answers to that. It's a really good question. It's evolving, which is why everyone's just playing with it. But I think we're going to have, within the next 5 to 10 years, a fundamentally different way with which we do this, just like the pandemic sped up our tech adoption by whatever the comments, 5 to 7 years. My parents were not using Walmart.com and Amazon.com before the pandemic. They had to. So it pushed us all to be digital natives, whether we wanted to or not. And now that we are, genie's not going back in the bottle. And so I think it will change how we've thought about change management, but I don't think anyone actually has a good answer to that just yet. We're making it up as we go.
I love that term, the velocity of change, because much more accelerated than in times past.
Yeah, and back in the day, or a year ago, it was one of these things where folks were saying, hey, it was FOMO. Everyone just said, hey, I got an AI thing. Well, you don't have an AI thing. You got it in a lab, you're just kicking it around. But now it's actually into production. not as a fear of missing out, but because it's so transformational, you have to adopt it. It's obligatory. You got to get in this game. And that's the part I think that has non-technical folks a little mystified, because I've heard this before. Yeah, not like this one's different. Yeah. And it's truly impressive. And then the final part is, as humans start to have a dialogue with the data, instead of just trying to get piece parts from it, but a dialogue with the data, it's going to change how we interact with all kinds of things. Because now folks that couldn't parse that information are going to have unfettered access, and not just to more information, but in a way to distill down to the little kernel knowledge you were looking for to make a decision. Because again, that's what the humans are good at. And I think it's going to be truly transformative.
You were throwing out some awesome zingers. Dialogue with the data. Before, when I looked at data, it was like, are you freaking kidding? More data, but the dialogue.
Exactly. It hurt my head. I'm like, oh, we got to put this into a database somewhere. Oh, man, this is painful.
Oh, exactly. I know I'll have a couple more, but I know Eric has the questions, and I'm going to turn it back over to him.
Yeah. So, Jason, just thinking about this and what you said too about things are in the past have been in a lab somewhere and people, it's been vaporware basically.
Yeah.
As now it seems like there's a pressure for a lot of companies to be able to put out their AI. And hurry and produce some sort of AI with a product. I guess with that, a two-part question, how do you feel about some potential problems with that happening, some type of accidents happening or something not working the way it is intended, and then the effect or the impact of that? And second part, what would you advise companies to do in order to put the proper security safeguards or guardrails around that from the beginning?
Yeah. Man, this is a big, hairy question because it is difficult. And most of my career has been in Silicon Valley. So it's easy to say we're doing this for good, mother and apple pie. And for the most part, it is. It's a tool. And if you don't think all the negative ways it can be used, it can just blindside you. It's not a perverse analogy, but it's appropriate. It's like a gun. Humans kill humans. Guns don't do it on their own. They don't just do things. The difference is we now have a tool that can do things. So we have to think differently on how we answer that question. For the first time, humans have made a tool that can do things without us fully understanding how it's doing those things. And the answer is we've got to be slow and judicious and make sure that we understand as much as we can what's happening inside of that black box and engine, so we can actually answer that question appropriately. We can over-rotate on bias. We can understand that we're opening back doors. We totally get that we can have different flavors of cybersecurity issues and breaches. We can comprehend that, but it's the unknown unknowns that worry me. The things that we haven't thought about is all this stuff gets connected. And I think it was Rumsfeld that did the known unknowns, the unknown unknown, all that crap. But point is, those unknown unknowns are worrisome because we're just not processing it. And so I think trying to legislate and regulate it, that's not going to work. They need to keep up. We need to have rules. That's not what I'm saying. But waiting for the rules to catch up in a country that's hypersensitive to privacy issues, the US is never going to let the rules body stay in front of our development cycle. So we've got to find a way to do it ethically, but more importantly, in a safe place. Slowing down isn't the answer. And so it's a long-winded way of saying, I don't actually know. But what I do know is humans need to be mindful of not creating a threat to humanity with a tool that humans can't fully understand, which is a big statement. I think folks are knowledgeable of it. I think most folks intend to do it right. But we're going to have to, almost to the comment earlier about use AI to see what else is happening with AI. You got to use AI to police AI because it's going to move at machine speed and we don't. And so we're going to have to put some kill switches and some controls in there. How we do that exactly with all these different models, I don't actually know.
Yeah, good points. So I think a few things too that you pointed out, it's such a big innovation at this point within the last year and a half. I almost think about the printing press. Gutenberg invented the printing press.
Yep.
Everyone started freaking out. Oh, wow, everybody's going to have copies of the news. They can print whatever they want. And so at that time, that was a huge innovation, a huge disruptor. And so then people started figuring out, okay, yeah, here's how we use it responsibly. Here's how it can help people. It's like everything. You can use it to help people or to not help people. And so like it's just, and it also, I think in my mind that a lot of these things do map to regular security constructs, such as confidentiality, integrity, availability, of course. And
absolutely.
With confidentiality, what are you putting into that thing? What are you getting back from it? Can someone change it, change the integrity of it? And so, yeah, you've got some very good points there on the impact of that.
Yeah, and I'm across a couple of startups that are in stealth and a couple that have come out recently in the Valley that basically are using AI to monitor AI. So this isn't just something in theory. Like it's in practice, it's happening because to get back to it, it's still the same NIST constructs. It's still the same MITRE constructs. It's not something different that we can't process or comprehend. We just have to have a tool to respond to it fast enough. Conversely, it's also helping from a SOC and a SOAR standpoint drastically because humans can't keep up with it and now we can. And so I would say we're still right down the middle of the road. I think AI is used more for good. AI can help us, and we'll need AI with the white hats to fight AI with the black hats to make sure that we stay on point and don't lose that center thing in the tug of war. But forever, it will be humans using AI in a bad way, not AI going rogue on us like Skynet is going to get us. That I don't think is
Well,
the existential threat we need to worry
yeah,
about.
a lot of people don't see that. So in Security Operations Center, being able to go through all of the logs and escalate alerts, that's
Yeah.
been, I've seen that now for, wow, 6 years or
Yeah.
so, and it's super valuable. And then the humans, of course, grade it and they see if it's good or not.
Exactly. Yeah, and
So
it's seeing a
there's so many
pattern.
good things.
Yeah,
Go
exactly.
ahead.
There's so many good things. And the problem is our news is salacious and clickbaity. And so it's the one bad thing that pops up to the top, not the 25 good things that happened that day. And
Totally.
so at the end of it, it's still optimism. It still is the glass is more than half full. Something bad will happen sooner or later. But the other one, and I'm not sure if I brought up in the last podcast, but I use this when I talk to my parents and my parents' friend. AI is like fire. It grilled my hamburger. It heated my house this winter. It also burned down my old hometown of Chicago. It depends on what you do with it. You got to make sure that you protect yourself from it. But we understand fire and how to use it. So we use it as an effective tool for humanity. I feel the same thing's going to happen for AI.
Nice. Maurice, I know you've got more questions. I've got one more follow-up one, but I want to allow you to ask
Oh,
one.
no. All good. I have a question about future. As one person explained it to me, AI is like Google was in the early 90s.
Well
It's
said.
whoa. And now we're right there at the cusp. So what's your company's future process and vision for not only AI, but especially within the next 5 or 10 years? What do you see your company's role?
Yeah, man, 10 years is way too far out to think through at this point. I'm not even gonna give you a faux answer on that one. We have a hard time with 18 to 36 month event horizons with all this stuff. Our approach is, and this is the old adage, and I forget who came up with it. It's like the iceberg. We've worked well with structured data for 20 years, right? We really have. That unstructured data has always been the crown jewel we just couldn't get our hands around, and now we can. And so I foresee for the next 2 to 3 years, it's going to continue to hone in on the unstructured data and the generative part for creativity. There's so much upside. It's so easy to do. The tools are there. We don't have to outthink it. Where it starts to really get transformative is those prediction engines on data analytics to look at things in a macro way. And that's where Clutch is looking at. So Clutch is deploying the here and now. What can we, from an ROI standpoint, see in 30 to 60 days that justify the project because it makes sense? Experiment, but do it in a way that's secure and mindful, table stakes, and you get some return now, client. And then once you're using it, let's look at how do we get to bigger decisions. Crawl, walk, run. Same thing with tech. The difference is that timeline from crawling to walking to running of, hey, it took the toddler 9 months and then they were walking for 2 or 3 years. And now it's like I crawled for a month, I walked for 2 months, now I'm gonna do a marathon. Like it's all velocity standpoint. Same approach, just a lot faster.
I can't
Absolutely.
even fathom what you folks are taking a look at, but I'm excited to
We'll
make
keep you
sure that we
posted.
keep.
Yeah,
Yes,
I know we're
yes.
top of the hour here, but we'd love to come back and check back in. Really appreciate the airtime.
Absolutely. And Eric, I know you said you had one more.
Yeah, so this is a big open-ended one. What are your thoughts on competition within AI engines? And I know I have my own personal beliefs about it, but what are your thoughts and your analysis of it?
Yeah, I think we're going to see big tech driving it. We'll see 3 to 5 primary engines for the next year or two. And as it becomes less expensive, and as we realize we're not going to run out of power, and as we do something innovative, put a data center in a satellite or put a data center deep sea so it doesn't cause too much heat, whatever the next cool hardware thing is, then it will get democratized and folks will catch up with the development. I do think there's an interesting inflection point right now that hasn't been this way since the 60s and 70s, which is academia and commerce need each other right now because it's so new and the innovation is happening so fast. It's going from lab to company to production quicker than it has before. And so I do see a tightening up of that one. But as it becomes less expensive and as we get in that exponential curve, I think what we see for the next 2 years will be big tech driving it. After that, I think we'll see a whole lot of other folks innovating. And then I think 10 years from now, my grandkids will be cranking out small language models on their iPhone or something. I don't know. But you know, my daughters aren't pregnant, so that's not foreshadowing to anything. So we'll be clear on that one.
Man. Oh, Jason, cool. I literally, we could go on and on. You need to come back. Pretty please. This is
I would love really to. Yeah, no, this is awesome. Appreciate it, guys. Thanks for your time.
You got it. And until next time, keep up the fantastic work.
Right on. And final closing comments, play with AI. You must do it. It's fun.